And from the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. Temporary cell service and internet connection has most Juneau residents back online after a damaged subsea cable caused an outage late last week. A repair ship called the Cable Innovator is now on its way to fix the damaged cable and restore a permanent connection, but it's unclear how long that fix may take. The outage began last Thursday evening. Southeast Alaska AT&T and Alaska Communication Systems users began reporting limited to no service in areas like Juneau, Haines, Skagway, and Gustavus. Temporary service was restored for most users in Juneau on Saturday. But according to an ACS spokesperson, the company was still trying to reconnect some areas as of Sunday. Juneau Police Department reported that its administrative phone system and non-emergency line were working again on Sunday. Its 911 emergency line appeared to be functioning normally throughout the outage. Juneau Deputy Manager Robert Barr said earlier today that the city's phone lines are up and running again as well. Last fall, Sitka experienced a similar internet outage when a subsea fiber optic cable broke. It took more than 2 weeks before connection was restored. In late January, a subsea cable that runs from Prudhoe Bay to Nome also broke, causing a widespread outage in northwest Alaska. According to a vessel tracker, the ship that will fix the cable left British Columbia on Saturday and is now on its way to Sitka. It's expected to arrive there tomorrow. It's unclear which part of the cable is damaged and how long it will take to fix the break. And former Alaska Congresswoman Mary Peltola and her former chief of staff have new jobs. They're both working for Holland & Hart, a law and lobbying firm. Peltola is now the senior director of Alaska Affairs, based at the firm's Anchorage office. Her former top aide in Congress, Anton McParland, is the senior director of federal affairs. Holland & Hart have offices in western states with a lot of public lands. Their lobbying clients include several mining companies, energy companies, and the city of Kotzebue. Protesters took to the streets of Gustavus on Saturday, joining hundreds of demonstrators around the country in response to staffing cuts at national parks. Glacier Bay National Park is headquartered in Gustavus, which is home to around 600 people, many of them current or former park employees. Park employees said they've lost one biologist as a result of the cuts and that their demonstration was a show of solidarity. Katie Dighton, a current park staff member, organized the demonstration as a private citizen.
We're just standing up for what we care about. I refuse to act like everything is okay at this point.
Roughly 40 people held up homemade signs with phrases like, "I speak for the trees." The park covers 3.3 million acres and brought in over 700,000 visitors in 2023. And Dighton says that number is growing. Sven Husen maintains facilities at Glacier Bay. He attended the protest wearing a shirt that read, "Protect our national parks."
There was no rally cry in particular, but we were just there to support the parks and support our employees across the nation.
Husen says that Gustavus depends on park employment and that staff there work like a, quote, intricate machine to make the landscape accessible.
And when you start taking pieces out of the machine, the service to the public starts to go down.
The National Park Service did not comment on the number of employees fired from Glacier Bay or on the demonstration. And a hydroelectric project in the remote southeast Alaska community of Angoon is on pause following the federal grant freeze announced in late January by the Trump administration. As KCAW's Meredith Reddick reports, the project was scheduled to start construction in just a few months.
The Thayer Creek project has been in the works since 1980 when Angoon's Village Corporation, Kutznuu Inc., negotiated the rights to develop hydropower on the creek. Last year, the project finally received $27 million in federal funding to construct a small plant that would supply power to the remote Admiralty Island community. Keith Green is the CEO of Kutznuu. He says construction was slated to start this May. Now the project is on hold indefinitely.
Well, at this point, without that federal funding, there's not much we can do because that's what we've been working towards.
He says he's optimistic that funding will be released eventually, but either way, Angoon residents will be waiting on hydropower for a while longer.
If it frees up later this year, it's still going to be a 2026 start date. So until we know for sure, we're just having to wait it out.
Angoon residents currently rely on diesel or wood to heat their homes, both of which are increasingly expensive and in short supply in the isolated island community. Angoon Mayor Peter Duncan says hydropower would mean stable energy costs and more jobs.
We were moving forward in a positive way that's going to cut our electrical prices for lights and all of that and to put people to work.
He says it's hard to not feel disappointed when the project was so close to becoming a reality.
How would you feel if you were pushing forward and things started to happen for you, and then somebody took that all away from you?
Green says the people of Angoon have already overcome decades of obstacles on the Thayer Creek project, and they're not going to give up easily.
They're very much in it for the long haul, and they will continue to go forward and fight for what they believe in and what they feel like they deserve.
In the meantime, he says Kootsnuwu will be ready to jump into action as soon as the funding is released. In Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
And leaders in the Alaska House and Senate say they're deeply concerned about the impacts of federal staff cuts and a forthcoming congressional immigration and tax cuts bill. Senate President Gary Stevens and House Speaker Bryce Edgman say the Trump administration priorities, quote, endanger the economic prosperity and social well-being of Alaskans. That's according to a letter the leaders sent to the state's congressional delegation on Thursday. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has the details.
Edgman says the two leaders are concerned a recent House-passed Republican budget framework will leave Congress no choice but to slash programs like Medicaid, SNAP, Head Start, and bypass mail.
Just to contemplate the impact, even if half of what's been proposed happens to Alaska, it is going to reverberate around the state in a way that we haven't seen in many, many years.
Medicaid is a particular concern for state lawmakers. The budget resolution from the U.S. House charges the committee overseeing Medicaid and Medicare to cut $880 billion from its budget over 10 years. Edgman and Stevens say the plan could lead to the loss of more than $2 billion in federal funding, and that's at a time when the state is already facing hundreds of millions of dollars in structural deficits amid faltering oil revenue. Stevens and Edgman also decry the Trump administration's moves to fire more than 1,000 newly hired or recently promoted federal workers, from fisheries researchers to forest rangers. Data on exactly which jobs have been lost has been spotty, though union leaders say they expect all of the nearly 1,400 so-called probationary federal employees in the state to lose their jobs. Another leader of the largely Democratic coalition controlling the state House, Kodiak Republican Representative Louise Stutz, says she's especially concerned the firings will make Alaska less safe. She points to agencies like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and its subsidiary, the National Weather Service.
It's horrifying. For the safety of our fishermen, as we all know, that's one of the most dangerous endeavors or professions that there is. And to reduce the safety factor even more is just unconscionable.
Some Republican state lawmakers, though, say leaders are overreacting. Senator Mike Schauer, a Wasilla Republican serving as the Senate minority leader, points to statements from congressional leaders promising to avoid sweeping cuts. He says for now it's all speculation. After all, at this point, Congress hasn't laid out the specifics.
First of all, the process is just starting. They have no idea. So anybody says anything about what's going to happen or how it's going to take place or what's going to be cut is pure speculation at this point.
As for the federal firings, Schauer says he supports Trump and billionaire Elon Musk's efforts to shrink the footprint of the federal government. But he says he's optimistic that even if the cuts go too far at first, critical jobs will be filled.
So this is maybe the process of ripping the Band-Aid off a little bit, and it's painful. But we may have to look at rebalancing when it's over, right? So it's going to be really a painful dip here as they kind of basically go through the sledgehammer. And then maybe it's time to come back in with a scalpel after that and start, okay, now what do we really need?
But to Stutz, that rings hollow. She says she's worried it'll exacerbate the state's struggle to keep young people and families from finding greener pastures elsewhere.
Well, that's great to say as these cars are headed down the highway. You know, we're talking about the out-migration. This is a perfect example of what's going to happen. You think it was bad before?
She says she's worried that even if the jobs come back, the people who filled them won't. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And with many new requirements from the Trump administration, it's an uncertain time for immigrants. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the new Philippine honorary consul for Alaska hopes that she can be of service.
Evelyn Abelio is known as Auntie Evelyn in the Filipino community in Anchorage, where she's made her home for more than 40 years. Earlier this month, she made a trip to San Francisco to the Philippine General Consulate to train for what is mostly a voluntary position. Now, she's ready to serve the whole state of Alaska.
It's kind of like a challenging time to be in this position, but I take things in stride and kind of like deal with issues in the moment.
Abellio has worked as a teacher, counselor, and as an investigator for the Alaska Human Rights Commission. She says it's experience that has been good preparation for this new role. She says there will be times she'll be called upon to help Filipinos in distress, but the job mostly involves a lot of clerical work, like helping people with travel documents such as lost passports. Beyond this, Abellio hopes to raise the profile of Filipinos in Alaska, who are the state's largest immigrant group. More than 35,000 live here and make up almost 5% of the state's population.
We are a diverse group, and so we have over 400 dialects in the Philippines that creates sometimes a barrier. Fortunately, Tagalog became the national language.
Abellio says it's hard for Filipinos who don't speak Tagalog to navigate immigration paperwork, especially the elders. She says it might seem odd, but Filipinos who speak different dialects often use broken English to communicate with each other. She says Filipinos originally came to Alaska to work in fisheries and mining, but today you'll find them in government services, home care businesses, and increasingly in education, where teachers from the Philippines have been recruited to ease staffing shortages at schools in rural Alaska. And there is another aspect of the job Abellio hopes to cultivate, trade and tourism between Alaska and the Philippines.
One of the products that was kind of exciting for me is cacao, because we have a lot of that in the Philippines.
Abellio says Filipino chocolate is one of many trade and investment opportunities she'd like to promote. Abellio will serve a 3-year term as honorary consul and replaces Rebecca Carrillo of Juneau. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 42 degrees and pretty sunny. And it looks like that'll be true tomorrow as well, with a high of 45. This is KTOO.